I'm joined by Delia Malone, who is an ecologist and the wildlife chair of the Sierra Club and a known wolf advocate. And we're here to talk about the Howl Yes film series, which is tonight at the CMC Spring Valley campus. Starts at 6 p.m., but there will be people from the Sierra Club at 5:30.
Thank you so much, Raleigh.
Thank you for your interest in joining us on the radio and bringing this educational film to our valley. Obviously, this is a topic that's generating a lot of discussion on both sides. And so could you begin by introducing the film? It's called Epic Yellowstone, Return of the Predators.
Return of the Predators is this marvelous film that Smithsonian Channel did. It's one in several segments, and it talks about what happened with Yellowstone after wolves and grizzlies returned. We are showing the film because we know that if wolves can come back to Colorado, and if there's enough of them for a long enough period of time, and if they're not persecuted, they can have that same restorative effect in Colorado as they've had in Yellowstone. So we wanted to show people just exactly how wolves and grizzlies have impacted Yellowstone.
So could you describe a little bit from your scientific perspective how that process works, why reintroducing a predator species is restorative to the landscape?
A apex keystone predator, like wolves, are essential to moderating the impacts of large ungulates like elk. And when we had bison in Colorado, the effects of bison as well. So it's a very straightforward but complicated process that wolves initiate. They initiate a process called a trophic cascade, and a trophic cascade that's positive, because there's plenty of negative trophic cascades that were occurring prior to wolves being restored to Yellowstone. So simply put, by wolves being on the landscape, they move elk around so that elk don't linger in willow, the streamside vegetation, and they don't linger in aspen. When elk are not moved, when there's no pressure from large carnivores, they basically just stand there and eat and eat and eat. And when they do that, the plants are overgrazed. They eventually, which they did in Yellowstone and in other places like Colorado, where they don't have wolf pressure, they eventually die. And in that dying, if they're along streams, the streams start eroding and the streams cut down. Fish leave, beaver leave. The vegetation that was normally there, willow and birch and alder, that supplied habitat for songbirds, that is gone, and songbirds leave. Same thing in the aspen groves. We know that in aspen, we know that in Colorado, aspen forests are dying, and one of the main causes that's been identified by the Colorado State Forester is overbrowsing by ungulates. When ungulates can just stand there, they love to eat the young aspen shoots that are coming up, and there's no way for the aspen forest to regenerate. So just by moderating that pressure that elk have on vegetation, wolves initiate this cascade of effects, starting with vegetation that can regrow. That way, birds and other mammals can come back. The biological diversity can be restored.
So this feature film of the Howl Yes film series, Epic Yellowstone, follows wolves and grizzly bears throughout a year in Yellowstone National Park, showing that process, how they play this restorative role in the ecosystem. What are the other films that are included in this festival?
We have two short films. Both films were made by a group called Grizzly Creek Films out of Montana, and both of those films were made specifically for the Rocky Mountain Wolf Project. So the Rocky Mountain Wolf Project is an umbrella organization. It's a coalition of wolf advocacy groups, and we've all been working together to bring wolves back to Colorado. One of the films is kind of our feature film about why we need wolves in Colorado. And the other film is actually an interview of a local rancher and his view as to why we need wolves back on the landscape.
All right. And then you as well are going to give a presentation?
I am. My presentation will focus a little bit more on the science and the evidence, really talking to the idea and debunking some of the myths that surround wolves. One myth that they're going to eat all the elk and the deer, which is just not proven out in the evidence that we have from the Northern Rockies over 25 years. Another hugely beneficial effect in Colorado that would be in Colorado if wolves were restored is their impact on actually improving the health of ungulate herds by removing the sick and the diseased. We have chronic wasting disease running rampant in Colorado in our mule deer and elk herds. And what we know is that wolves focus their predation on the diseased individuals in a herd so that the herds actually get healthier. Maybe they wouldn't remove chronic wasting disease because it is so prevalent now, but they would at least serve to halt the spread of chronic wasting disease.
Recently on KDNK, Bill Kite, one of our public affairs hosts, interviewed local rancher Bill Fales, and he voiced some of his concerns. So I was wondering if we could listen to a few clips of that together and for you to respond to
Absolutely.
Him.
Absolutely.
Okay. Let's compare Colorado with its 5.5 million people, many of them who are amazing recreationists, are out in the woods all the time, to the 1 million of humans in Montana or the 500,000 in Wyoming. The Colorado that existed 150 years ago when wolves were here does not exist today.
Bill mentioned some numbers, 5 million in Colorado and 1 million in whichever state. It's important to recognize where those people are. It's important to look to the demographics of Colorado and look to the state demographer who has identified where those people are and where those people are predicted to be. So what the numbers show us, and I really do like to stick with the evidence, what the numbers show us is that 84% of the people in Colorado are on the Front Range, in the Front Range cities of Denver, Fort Collins, Pueblo, and Colorado Springs. 11% of the people in Colorado are distributed along the western tier counties, so like Garfield County on the very in Grand Junction and down in Montrose. The remaining 6% are spread between the Central Mountains and the very far eastern plains. So we really need to look to those numbers and where exactly the people are and recognize that fully 16 million acres of public lands are in Colorado's West Slope. That's where the elk are, and that's where the wolves would be.
And what about the danger to recreationists? For example, people who like to hike and backpack alone.
Really important to understand, again, the evidence. So let me point again to Yellowstone, where they keep really good records of how many people are camping and exactly what they're doing. So from 1995 until 2015, there were approximately 2.5 million tent camper nights. That means 2.5 million nights of people camping in tents in Yellowstone. During that same period of time, there's about, you know, give or it varies, but about 100 wolves in Yellowstone. There was not a single incident of wolves being aggressive or attacking or being negative at all with humans in those tents for 2.5 million times.
Okay. Should we continue?
We have maybe 10% of the deer that we used to have 30 years ago. There are lots of factors hurting the deer and elk population from predators. We have a lot more predators. We have an amazing amount of recreation that's displacing them from the range. We have loss of habitat. We have highways and fences. All those factors conspire against them and to take a population of those deer and elk that's already in trouble and add wolves just doesn't make sense to me.
In the Northern Rockies, since wolf reintroduction in 1995, right now we have about 1,900 gray wolves spread through Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, and a few in Washington and Oregon. Since their reintroduction in 1995, the elk population in each of those three northern Rocky Mountain states is either at or exceeds the population that existed before wolves were there. The elk population has not declined. In Colorado, we have about 280,000 elk, more than any of the other lower 48 states. We also have about 400,000 deer. And yes, deer are declining, but it is certainly not due to predators. What the research shows us, what the science shows us, is that it is the oil and gas development, the loss of habitat to subdivisions, roads, all of the anthropogenic human influences are what is resulting in the decline of mule deer. What the research conversely shows us is that wolves have a beneficial effect on both elk and deer populations. Wolves primarily predate elk, but occasionally they will take deer if they're available. The primary predator on mule deer are mountain lions. Mountain lions, similar to wolves, have a beneficial effect on mule deer populations. Even CPW, Colorado Parks and Wildlife researchers, have shown its habitat degradation and the loss of habitat to oil and gas, to golf courses, and so on and so on, that has resulted in the decline of mule deer populations. Interestingly enough, another effect that elk have is to outcompete mule deer. So we have this enormous population of elk, 280,000. And even in Colorado Parks and Wildlife's research, they identify elk, the overpopulation of elk, as a contributing factor to the decline of mule deer. Importantly, over half of the data analysis units, Colorado Parks and Wildlife's elk hunting units, exceed the carrying capacity, or what Colorado Parks and Wildlife identifies as the number of elk that they want. So in over half of the data analysis units, Colorado Parks and Wildlife wants less elk.
We've been, and especially my wife Marge has really been working, learning about wolves and the avoidance strategies that they talk about to keep the wolves from predating on your cattle are defenders of wildlife who are big wolf proponents readily admit that those avoidance strategies don't work on large-scale land areas.
You know, in Colorado, we've had the benefit of 25 years of experience up in the Yellowstone area with wolves and livestock on the landscape. And in those 25 years, the folks that live up there, the ranchers that live up there, have had the opportunity to develop coexistence strategies that absolutely work. We see places like the Tom Miner Basin, where range riders, cowboys and cowgirls, are using these very simple, very basic, yes, requires change, but strategies of rekindling the herding instinct is one. Another strategy is simply to have cowboys and cowgirls out there with the cattle and with the sheep. And there is so much documentation over these 25 years of strategies that do work on very large landscapes like Montana. Montana is a pretty darn big state. And in places that are similar to Colorado's West Slope, like the Tom Miner Basin with mountains and where they have wolves, they have had experiences over the past years where they have had no depredations on their cattle and no depredations on sheep. Defenders has been a really excellent partner with the ranchers up there in helping to develop strategies that actually do work. Yes, change is going to be required, but change can benefit everyone. The range actually improves. When the range riders are there, the cowboys and cowgirls are out there with the cattle, with the sheep, they can be moving those cattle and sheep around so that the range isn't overgrazed. Right now in Colorado, all we need to do is take a walk and look at the range. And in a lot of those areas, it's not very healthy. And so what they've seen and what the science has shown us in experimental plots, large experimental plots, thousands of acres, is that when the range riders are with the cattle and with the sheep, they can have a better effect. Strategies like rekindling the herding instinct to enable the cattle to circle up when there's a predator around, put their calves in the center, like bison did historically, like elk do now, protects the calves from the predators. And it works. We've seen it. There is so much evidence. We just need to look at the numbers. The numbers of elk is from the wildlife management agencies. The numbers of livestock killed is so minimal. In Montana, a good analog for Colorado is that they have about the same number of cattle on there in the mountains in Montana as we do on the western slope of Colorado. They average, and they have about 500 wolves in those mountains. They average about 50 cattle per year out of about 500,000 are eaten by wolves. We would have the same experience here. And in our Initiative 107, our initiative that we are trying to get on the Colorado 2020 ballot, that initiative specifically says confirmed livestock depredations by wolves will be paid for. Ranchers will be compensated. There really is an upside to having wolves back on the landscape. It brings back the wildness. It brings back the health of the landscape. It actually restores biological diversity. Biological diversity that across the world is declining. By restoring wolves, we can change that scenario. We can actually change for good if we bring wolves back.
So you mentioned ballot initiative 107, which would mandate that Colorado Parks and Wildlife restore the gray wolves west of the Continental Divide. As you mentioned, that's where the majority of our public lands are here in this state, and compensates livestock owners for those losses. Where would the money come from to compensate the losses?
The compensation funds would come from Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Importantly, for instance, Colorado Parks and Wildlife right now and for years has money set aside to compensate ranchers or beehive owners or farmers for damage done to livestock or to their beehives or to whatever from wildlife. So, for instance, last year, they pay ranchers, or every year they pay ranchers for damage done to hay by elk. They pay for beehives that were gotten into by bears. They pay sheep ranchers for depredations from bears. So it would come from that fund.
Mm-hmm. So there would be a necessity potentially to grow that fund either through more sales and hunting licenses or an increase there, or more funding directly from the state to the Wildlife Department?
Well, I'd answer that in two ways. One, last year they paid out about $700,000 to ranchers and farmers. The fund was about $1.2 million. Mm. The other part of that is that Colorado Parks and Wildlife does have issues with funding. And there is a bill going through Congress right now that would take oil at some, not all, but some oil and gas revenues and take those revenues and divvy those up according to the states and where they came from. And that fund from the oil and gas revenues would go directly to wildlife agencies. So that would be a great source of funding to manage all wildlife, not just the wildlife that's hunted.
All right. Well, once again, this event tonight, Howl Yes, the film series is at the CMC Spring Valley campus. And at 5:30, there will be people talking about this ballot initiative, taking signatures on the petition. And also, the films start at 6. And your presentation, is it before or after the films?
It will be after the film so that people have an opportunity to think about questions and we can do kind of a deeper dive into some of these issues.
All right. Well, Delia Malone, ecologist and wildlife chair of the Sierra Club, is there anything else that you'd like to add?
I just want to say thank you, Raleigh. This was an opportunity to really talk in depth about some of the issues, and there's plenty. So just great appreciation for this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.